Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Today on Quick Slants Podcast, kicking through the post-combine refuse. What do we kick over? We kick over the phone number of Phil Savage, executive director of the Senior Bowl. Pick it up, Phil. My throat hurts.
Phil Savage, he's a former front office chief, personnel guy, general manager, and worked under Bill Belichick. So he's a great guest for us to have on as we get ready for the draft, Tom, obviously, because he knows what Bill Belichick likes, what he doesn't like. He knows what a good college football player needs to do to be then a good and productive NFL football player. And he spat all kinds of names, positions, jersey numbers, hometowns, extracurricular activities at us. It made my head spin. I think it did the same for you.
An encyclopedic knowledge. We're still in the intro, so I'm still doing the voice.
All that and more on Quick Slants the Podcast.
This is brought to you by Papagino's, obviously, because it's the official pizza of Quick Slants, the podcast, Quick Slants, the television program as well, lest you forget. And Tom, for our listeners, if they so choose, and I encourage them to choose, go online, put in an order for takeout, type in the code 4799, and Tom, you will get a large cheese pizza for $7.99 for you, your friends, your family, all your closest loved ones, maybe neighbors if you're friendly with them as well. You know what? Heck, have them all do it at once, and then you're just swimming in Papagino's for
Papagino's cheese
less than a dollar a slice. Mm. And there's no better deal out there. There's no better pizza out there. So please go ahead and do that. Also, please go ahead and enjoy this conversation with Phil Savage. I think we should bring him in right now. Tom, what do you think?
Bam. So here is Phil Savage right now. And Phil, obviously you are as entrenched with prospects coming out of college and how they look over the course of time as anybody could be. This quarterback class has generated a lot of conversation because there are a couple of elites, a couple of pretty good ones who project as maybe being very good, and then some interesting guys in the middle rounds. What's your overview of the group right now?
Yeah, Tom, I would go all the way back to last summer when I visited the Manning Academy over in Thibodaux, Louisiana. It's typically where we start to evaluate the quarterbacks for the Reese's Senior Bowl because Archie and Peyton and Eli, they bring in 35, 40 quarterbacks from across the country to serve as counselors. And on that given day, guys like Josh Allen and Mason Rudolph and Sam Darnold were all in attendance. So it was a chance to really start to assess what was going to be out there. And I thought really from that point forward, all the way through the training camp time and then into the season, that this would be a quarterback class that had quite a bit of depth in terms of guys that could be had in maybe the third, fourth, fifth round. But I have honestly felt all along, and the top four quarterbacks, if you want to consider Sam Darnold, Josh Rosen, Josh Allen and Baker Mayfield as those four. Mm-hmm. I like all of them, but honestly, I'm not sure that I'm in love with any of them. I think every one of them has a flaw that you're going to have to work around. And I felt like that throughout the entire college season that they were probably all overhyped, much overrated. But the problem is if you're a team in need of a quarterback, then you have to seriously consider any of those four, especially in the top half of the first round.
Isn't it funny how once that hype train leaves the station, you almost have to stare down your fan base if you're one of the, you know, teams picking in the top 20 picks. If you need a quarterback and you skip Baker Mayfield, you know that there's going to be an outcry that says, well, couldn't we use that guy? And that's one thing that Phil and I agree upon, because Phil Perry here was saying that this is a bit of a – there is a perception that this is an overhyped class to a degree just because they've been on our table for a while.
Yeah, Phil, I just from talking to some people at the Combine, they sort of, you know, hinted at exactly the same thing you're saying here, which is, you know, some interesting prospects, certainly prospects with tools, but no perfect prospect out there. And a couple of the guys that – we're interested in being in New England, knowing the Patriots have a bottom of the first round pick and a couple in the second round, and knowing that they could be interested in a quarterback. I'm interested to get your take on a couple of the guys that you had at the Senior Bowl who are sort of viewed as outside of that top four group, particularly Kyle Aletta and Mike White, and I guess Mason Rudolph should be in that category as well. I know he wasn't able to play in the Senior Bowl, though. What's your take on sort of that next tier?
Yeah, I had a chance to see Mason. Oklahoma State actually played in Mobile. They played against South Alabama back in September. So, you know, he comes from an offense that typically the quarterback posts huge numbers, and that's exactly what he did. I feel like that he's sort of a classic drop-back passer in terms of a bit statuesque. I think he's a little bit stiff as an athlete, in all honesty. You know, based upon what we saw at the Combine, honestly, I think that Mason Rudolph's probably going to lose a little bit of momentum. I would have a tough time thinking that he's actually going to go in the first round. I think he's more in line as a second to third round type of option. Now, the other two quarterbacks you mentioned, Mike White from Western Kentucky and Kyle Laletta from Richmond, I had a chance to see both of them in November. And when I went to Western Kentucky, I was really taken back by Mike White's ability to spin the football. Now, he's really got a good arm. He's a natural thrower of the football. He only played really 1 year of high school football before he went to South Florida. They changed offenses on him after a couple years. He ends up at Western Kentucky, but I think there's some real upside to him. He's not a runner. He's not really a scrambler. So, you know, he's learned to play from within that pocket under a couple different coaches there at Western. And then with Kyle Laletta, I saw him in a practice the middle of November, and, you know, I thought that he had a good enough arm. He doesn't have an explosive arm, but I think he's got a good enough arm to make the jump from college to pro. He's an intriguing prospect to me for a couple reasons. Number one, he has a quarterback background. His father was a quarterback at the Naval Academy. You know, his family, his brothers played quarterback. And the other thing is that he had an ACL at the end of last season. He rehabbed all of last year, got back for the opener in late August, never really missed a beat. So he's had to overcome some things, and he's really had to work to become a good player. And, of course, down here he was okay in the practices, but in the game he was sensational. He had 198 yards and three touchdown passes and a little over a quarter's worth of work. So I think Laletta has definitely helped himself, and I would see him as probably a second to fourth round option for somebody right now.
It's funny. I look at him and the position has changed so much and the currency of it has changed so much. I look at Laletta and, you know, immediately trying to think of comps of efficient, good leader quarterbacks who have, you know, pop gun arms, not to be too derisive, but just not that big explosive arm. And I keep coming back to Hoyer to some degree. And even like, a Garcia or a Detmer. I know those guys were probably a little bit more mobile, aside from Hoyer, but do any of those comps ring true to you?
Maybe, to a certain extent. You know, it's interesting with Kyle. He's had four different coordinators in 4 years at Richmond. I mean, we always focus on all the changes at the major college level, but the same thing happened at the FCS level with him. So, you know, he's just one of those guys that's really learned to adapt, and he's been very pliable through his career in college. And I think you have to be that way in today's NFL because literally no 2 years are the same. I mean, you know, with so much turnover with the coaches and general managers, it's hard to really get a foothold if you're a second, you know, fourth, sixth round type of quarterback, because the landscape's always changing on you. So that's why I really have high hopes for him. And, you know, just to build upon the point you guys were making about those top four quarterbacks, just to go back to that for a moment, I think the real challenge for those teams in the first half of the first round is trying to debate within those rooms. Do we take a quarterback that we know has a little bit of a flaw? We're going to have to work around and accommodate maybe something that he's not great at right now, versus a cleaner prospect at a non-quarterback position. I mean, there's at least six top flight players at non-quarterback positions that you could argue should go off the board before a single quarterback. I'm talking about Saquon Barkley, the running back, and Minkah Fitzpatrick from Alabama, the DB, and Quentin Nelson from Notre Dame. And, you know, there's several others Derwin that kind of fit in that category. You know, Derwin James, perhaps. You know, Bradley Chubb, the defensive end from NC State, particularly if you're a 4-3 team. So, you know, you look at that group of players, and I mean, that is a tough call for these decision makers when you know you're going to opt to roll the dice on a quarterback versus maybe a more certain commodity.
Phil, one of the things I wanted to ask you was what you have seen from offensive linemen over the course of the last few years, and we've talked about this a few different places, but given the systems that these guys are coming from, it seems like it's harder and harder to find guys that can contribute relatively quickly, especially at the tackle position. Is there anybody that might be available at the bottom of the first round for the Patriots? They're in a situation now where, you know, Nate Solder's a free agent, and there may not be much behind him if they can't keep him around.
Yeah, it's definitely become a challenge. You know, we've always focused and talked about how the spread offense in college has impacted the quarterbacks, but in reality, it's impacted all of the positions, quite frankly. I mean, you look at the offensive line nowadays, and most schools are building what I just call a five-man unit, where there's no real distinction between the left tackle versus the right tackle versus the right guard versus the left guard. I mean, they're all kind of the same because they're, you know, there's just, they play as a unit. There's not as much of a premium placed on that left tackle as a standalone pass protector. So with that being said, as I went through the combine the last 4 days, I just make little notes next to the player's name of guys that I think are bona fide, legit first rounders. And this year, amazingly enough, I really only have, one tackle, and that's Mike McGlinchey. Now, there's a couple of interior linemen like Will Hernandez from UTEP or Quentin Nelson from Notre Dame that are likely to go in the first round. But as far as just a tackle, it's staggering to think that there could only be really one tackle to go in the first round this year.
Is there a guy out there who jumps off the page as being a Patriot-type prospect, do you think, in terms of that tackle position? Because as Phil said, Nate's up. You also have his backups, Cam Fleming and Adrian Waddle, are free agents, and Antonio Garcia is coming back from an illness that wiped out his first year. So is there anybody who jumps off the page at tackle to you?
You know, as an athlete, and I think he probably is more ideally suited for the inside, but he did play tackle in college, is Austin Corbett. I mean, he's got late first round, you know, top 50 type talent, but he's a little bit short for tackle in terms of, you know, the overall length. But Terrell Crosby from Oregon, I think, is probably a player to watch in terms of that, you know, 25 to 55 range in this draft. He's played on the left side. He projects to either left or right. He could be a bit of a swing tackle, I think. But I liked Terrell Crosby and our game down here. And then I also thought that he did some positive things at the combine. Now, the other player that was very intriguing, I've not studied on tape, in all honesty, is a junior from UCLA named Colton Miller. You know, he's 6'8.5", 309 pounds. I'm sure there's probably some developmental aspects to his game But his workout, just the fact that he handled his body that well, I think he'll probably be in the mix. And I tell you, the guy that I think fits right into that category is Brian O'Neill from the University of Pittsburgh. Now, he was an underclassman graduate that was eligible for our game. Brian's a sensational athlete. He was a guy that came out of high school as a tight end. He's bulked up and playing tackle for Pitt. But he's got left tackle feet. He just has to get stronger. And there's one thing that I've learned through the years of watching the NFL is that, you know, oftentimes you can't change or improve a player's speed or athleticism, but you can improve their strength. And I think if O'Neill can get his strength up, then he's certainly a potential starter type player for the NFL.
Good deal. Hey, do you have a second for one or two more just on the front seven prospects?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Also in box safety or coverage linebacker type guys. Phil,
yeah,
Phil has that.
Well, I just think, Phil, it's great to have you on with us for our purposes because you know Bill Belichick. You know him well. You know, you've known him for a long time. And, you know, he's established a certain track record, I think, in terms of some of the things he likes in draftable prospects. And I think specifically in the front seven, you know, we've seen a lot of big linebackers come to New England. We've seen, you know, a lot of long defensive linemen that are hoping to get to the quarterback back once they get to the Patriots here. Is there anybody, you know, like kind of bottom half of the first round, maybe second round guys that in that front seven the Patriots might be able to benefit from because it looks like they could use a boost there?
Yeah, you know, I would say that this draft, while it's not particularly strong in the pure old-fashioned 4-3 defensive end. I mean, you got Bradley Chubb at the top and then Marcus Davenport from UT San Antonio appears to be a first rounder. But there are some interesting cats that are edge type outside backer combination sub pass rushers. And, you know, Sam Hubbard from Ohio State had a terrific workout. He's a junior that's coming out. I think he'll be off the board by the time the Patriots come up. But how about someone right in your backyard? And that's Harold Landry.
Right.
You know, he was really hyped up a year ago, decided to go back to school, suffered an ankle injury, I believe is what it was, missed some of the latter part of the season, did not have the statistics that he posted the year before. So, you know, people are sort of off of him. And I think he's a player, absolutely, that – you know, the Patriots could be looking at there at the bottom of the first round in terms of just sheer ability. A guy that's production has never quite matched the potential has been Lorenzo Carter from Georgia. I don't know if y'all saw his workout, but, you know, he's 6'5", 250, and he ran right in the 4-5 range as an outside backer. He's familiar with the 3-4 defense, having played some of that at Georgia under Kirby Smart, who's obviously a disciple of Nick Saban, who obviously has a connection to Bill up there. But those are a couple of the names that come to mind. I mean, Kroko Touré from Rutgers. I mean, he's a guy.
There you
very
go, Rutgers guy.
Talent. You know, he's an outside the first round player, but he's somebody to me that if he gets with the right coaching staff, His upside is really unlimited.
Phil, it's a shame that you don't know enough of these players to give us any insight at all.
It's like an encyclopedia.
last thing, and I only have about a minute here before I have to let you go, is that kind of box safety coverage linebacker position. I know that Leighton Vander Esch, you know, he's not a straight box safety. He's a different breed. But I look at the Patriots in the Super Bowl, and so often they were even in a one linebacker alignment with just Kyle Van Noy on the field. I think it would have been different if Hightower was healthy, and he might have been, you know, moving back from end into the middle of the field. But the position has changed so drastically, and I look at Deion Buchanan, Tony Jefferson, all those guys, and Patrick Chung, but he's getting up a little long in the tooth, as those kinds of players. Who was the kid that I'm trying to think of from Alabama?
Currently?
Well,
Rashawn Evans is coming out. Yeah.
Is he going to hang around long enough? And would that have any Patriots suitability, Rashawn Evans?
Well, Rashawn Evans, extremely versatile player. He's played inside backer. He's rushed from the edge. He mirrored Deshaun Watson in the national championship game, you know, back in several years ago in 20, I guess that was at the end of the 2015 season out in Arizona. And he was really the difference in the game. So he is multidimensional. I think it depends, honestly, on the medical checks in terms of is he 100% healthy and ultimately what he runs. He'll run, actually, at the Bama Pro Day on Wednesday. But I like Rashawn Evans. He's in the same class as C.J. Mosley, who went 16th overall to the Ravens.
I was going to ask if he's like top 15.
But I don't know, because he didn't have quite the senior year that people thought he would. Maybe he slipped some. But, you know, as far as, a safety kind of athlete that can come down in the box and provide some coverage and those sorts of things, you know, Kazir White from West Virginia sort of fits that category, not as a first rounder, but I'm talking about somebody, you know, a little bit later in the draft. There was an interesting prospect from Oklahoma State named Trey Flowers. Now, he may end up being too tall for sort of the prototype of that, but he ran in the 4.4s yesterday. And, you know, the thing that I
can't go wrong with your Trey Flowers.
That might get confusing for us, in all honesty, Phil. We've already got a Trey Flowers here. Yeah, geez.
Exactly. You know, Godwin Igwebuke from Northwestern, he ran really fast yesterday at the combine. But my point is, when I watched the Patriots in the Super Bowl, I saw a lot of reaching and grabbing and just guys that were just not athletic and quick enough to tackle out an open space. And to me, that's probably the place where the Patriots have to upgrade the most. It's just that ability to get people on the ground out in space. And that's where the game has sort of gone over the last couple of years.
Will you spend some time talking to Bill and Nick, you know, as the process goes along, if I could ask you an inside football kind of question?
Last year I did see Bill at the Bama Pro Day, and we had a nice conversation. You know, I haven't had a lot of interaction with Coach through the years because he's so busy, quite frankly. I try to stay out of the way. And then I'm sure I'll see Nick tomorrow at the Pro Day, and then, you know, in advance of the A-Day game, because that's one of my jobs is the color man for the Crimson Tide Sports Network.
Well, your work is valued up here and valued around the country, Phil, so we really appreciate you taking, you know, 20 minutes with us here today. We really appreciate that.
Thanks so much, Phil.
Well, good deal, Tom. Of course, I wrote a book last year called Fourth and Goal Every Day, and, you know, a lot of it was based on those years in Cleveland under Coach Belichick and that staff that produced so many GMs and head coaches. But for your listeners that really want to read a true football book, I'd recommend it not only because I wrote it, but because I think it's a good off-season project, especially when we focus so much on player personnel here in the off-season.
Can we get that on Amazon still?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Excellent.
Love it.
Well,
great.
We will be picking that up, and maybe we can circle up again as the process goes along. Phil Savage, thanks so much.
Okay, guys, enjoy the conversation. Thank you.